Now today is Yud Kislev. Today is Sunday, it's Yud Kislev. And both of those details are significant. Because when the Mittal Rebbe was released from prison, it was also Sunday, Yud Kislev. It was the same kvias as it is this year. I'll start the story in the middle. All of us know the story about the war that took place between the Russians and the French, between Russia and Napoleon, who supposedly was a Democrat. That means he stood for one person, one vote, and then he made himself an emperor. How you became an emperor in a democracy, for that you have to be smart like Napoleon, you understand? To work that out, and it should all add up. Napoleon used to kill millions of people and saying he's doing it all because he loves humankind. Like Alexander Mugdun. How many people did Alexander Macedonia kill? But he was fixing the world. He was taking them out of the Dark Ages. It's an interesting concept. Kill people and tell them you're doing it only for you. It's only because I love you. Okay, you have to dispense of human beings. Stalin had the same philosophy. And he did. He brought Russia out of the Dark Ages. But he killed the Khvesva 60 or 70 million Russians. What happened was, Altareba hated Napoleon. It's a long story. With Apnimius also, it's not just a story that happened in the real world. There's Apnimius to the story. There's a Lashon that's brought in Sipurif and Chassidim. That the Altareba said, that Bishaz the Rebbe, that meant the Magid, his neshama had to come down into the world. The forces of evil said, how could you allow such a great neshama to come into the world? He's going to sweep the world. So the agreement was that the Magid's neshama came into the world. This was the Rebbe's Lashon. Is Yamolt given the Kaiser Wilhelm? There was a Kaiser, a German Kaiser named Wilhelm. You're talking now the times of the Magid. Who was the Liumazeh of the Mezitcher Magid. Explain it however you wish. And of course, that comes with the Enlightenment, I figure. And then the Alter Rebbe said, when Itzter has done Napoleon, now there is Napoleon, without spelling out that what he was trying to say was that when his neshama had to come into the world, a bone had to be thrown to the Yumaz, and this was Napoleon. Napoleon was a tremendous personality, extremely charismatic, very powerful. And the Alter Rebbe saw him as a spiritual force, not just a physical presence. Alter Rebbe, you say he's a machashev. He had the powers of the occult, magic, special koichas of tumah. And Alter Rebbe hated him sinas mavis. Alter Rebbe said, it's impossible to hate anything more than I hate Napoleon. He saw him as his real enemy. From the Maisim and the Tolid Upshit, it's a long story, but he said to his Rebbe, the Mendel and Imran of it, Napoleon is Timme. Napoleon was the epitome of Tumme. And as a result, Alter Rebbe fought against him with everything he had. Lamata ulamaila, here and in heavens. But one of the details of the Alter Rebbe's approach to Napoleon was he did not want that the French should occupy him even for a moment. So as the French advanced into Russia, the Alter Rebbe ran away. And he stayed mamish hours ahead of the front for months. And it cost him his life in Das Tachten. Medically speaking, Das Tachten, Alter Rebbe paid with his life. So the story goes, getting back to the story, the Alter Rebbe said that when my Rebbe's neshama to come into this world, the Samach Mem objected and they gave him the Kaiser Wilhelm. Yet this dog Napoleon, and the Alter Rebbe said, quote, Ich hab moira, ich will daven onkommen zu Messiras nefesh bepeil. Which means, I'm afraid that I'm going to have to resort to actual self-sacrifice. Which means in English, for those who don't understand, it's going to cost me my life. On kach hava, Alter Rebbe was nostalgic. And we know, I don't know how we know, but we know, it says in the Sikhes, that the Alter Rebbe was supposed to live 8 more years. Alter Rebbe passed away, Chaim, 68, he was supposed to live 8 more years. And the Rebbe Maharash had a ben B'chor, the oldest son, whose name was Rebbe Avraham Sender, who passed away at the age of 8. And he was a wunderkind mamish, was an unusual child. And the Tzemach Tzedek said that this was the neshama of the Alter Rebbe. Tzemach Tzedek said, this is the 8 years. But what happened was, Alter Rebbe passed away, and White Russia was destroyed. It was in shambles. Destroyed. Because in the French retreat, they destroyed everything. They just burnt and pillaged and absolutely destroyed everything. Chorav gemacht. Destroyed. And Alter Rebbe passed away. At the time of the Histalkos of the Alter Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe was not present, if you don't mind. Yeah, the Mittler Rebbe was not present. Why was the Mittler Rebbe not present? The Mittler Rebbe was not present because the war was already at the verge of ending. The war was almost over. And because the war was almost over, the Mittler Rebbe went to find permanent lodging for the Alter Rebbe, a place to live. He was living in a village called Piena. There wasn't a Jew in the town. He was living in the house of a goy. And you know the story. This goy had dogs in his front yard that were especially trained to attack Jews. I mean, this is the east of Eastern Europe. This is the middle of Russia. They hated Jews big time. And when the Alter Rebbe came to the house, the goy warned them, these dogs pick on Jews. Alter Rebbe says, let's go. And the dogs became puppies, mamish, like sheep. And the goy was so impressed that he became mamish Alter Rebbe's servant. And he behaved the whole time Alter Rebbe was there. There's even a famous story that happened many years after the Histalkos, where he brought people to tshuva who wanted to eat not kosher. You do, I've told you the story many times. But there was not a Jew in sight. That's why he had to move his remains, his guf kaddish, to Hadich, which was the nearest city where there was Pashta Cemetery. So the Mittler Rebbe missed Alter Rebbe's Histalkos. And he missed his Levaya. And he may have missed a part of Shiva too, I don't know. When the Mittler Rebbe heard that Alter Rebbe was in a style, like he fainted. He chalished. And they revived him. So he fainted again. The Mittler Rebbe was around 40. He was 39 actually. 39 years old. And he kept on chalishing. And at a certain point, it Pasha became dangerous. So they came to the Mittler Rebbe and they told him that the Alter Rebbe was really still alive, but he's very ill. So he stopped chalashing. And then they broke the news to him slowly. He fainted again. And they were mamish afraid for his life. And they couldn't afford to lose another one. You know, this is they needed the Rebbe. So what are they going to do? What are you going to do? So they took a box full of chassidus, Alter Rebbe's chassavim, which I reckon for the most part Alter Rebbe had not written himself. Because chassidus Alter Rebbe did not write. It was mistame hanoches from chassidim. And they placed it right next to the Rebbe's head, that when he opens his eyes, the first thing he would see would be the chassidus. And kach hava, the Mittler Rebbe opened up his eyes and he saw the chassidus. So he said in Yiddish, "Sizdom mit vos zu leben." We have a reason to live. We have with what to live. And he stopped fainting. The Reb Nochum, the Mittler Rebbe's son, tells the story. He says, "Mele de tate, my father." My father had a great mind, so he was able to survive the Alter Rebbe's Histalkos. But Freidke, Mittler Rebbe had an older sister, who may have been 9 years older than him. Freide. She couldn't deal with the loss of the Alter Rebbe, and she passed away the same year, in Sivan, 5 months later, and she's buried together with the Alter Rebbe in the oil. In the Alter Rebbe's oil, there's two graves. One is the Alter Rebbe. One is Alter Rebbe's daughter, and we're not even sure which is which, from what I understand. Now, the Mittler Rebbe was far away. He was in Malarus, he was in small Russia, in near Kremenchuk. The war was over, and he had a decision to make. What should he do? Where should he settle? The Hasidim of White Russia sent him urgent messages telling him that we are distraught, we are defeated, we are crushed. You must come back and help us. Raise their spirits. Give them back their lives. Everything was ruined. Everything was destroyed. Forget the Misnagdim. It was another whole issue. But just from the war, it was a devastation. And the Rebbe contemplated it. And he eventually made the decision to come back and settle in Lubavitch. Lubavitch, for those who do not know, is mamish a few miles away from Lozhne, where the Alter Rebbe was born. Lubavitch has a very interesting history as it comes to Chassidus, because the Alter Rebbe was raised in Lubavitch. Alter Rebbe was born in Lozhne, but when he was very, very little, the Baal Shem Tov said to his father, "I don't like Lozhne. There's too many people around, too many yentes, too many eyes. I don't want people to notice this little boy. He should be unseen. So you have to move to a place where there's almost no people." So the Baruch, who had farms, he couldn't leave Lozhne. His business was in Lozhne, and he was a fruit farmer, was connected to the land, moved to Lubavitch. And Alter Rebbe was actually raised in Lubavitch. And his two malamdim were Rabbi Sacha Ber and Rabbi Yosef, who were the Rav and the Magid of Lubavitch respectively. And when he became a little bit older, and the Baal Shem Tov was no longer concerned with Ayin Hara, they moved back to Lozhne. So he spent some of the most important years in Lubavitch, and then when he was of an age where the Baal Shem Tov said it doesn't matter if people recognize his genius, they moved back to Lozhne, which Altrebbe was. Altrebbe was a Lozhne boy. And he spent most of his life in Lozhne. He was a Rebbe and a Magid in Lozhne for many, many, many years. So Lubavitch had links to Chabad from the Altrebbe's times. Now that the Mittal Rebbe was looking for relocation, to come back to White Russia. Now everybody has to remember, the Altrebbe did not spend the end of his life in Lozhne. The Altrebbe spent the end of his life in Liadi, which is far away. I don't know where it is, but Liadi is more east and south, I believe, in Russia. Because, and there's a reason for that too, the Altrebbe did not want to leave Lozhne, because the government wanted to watch the Altrebbe. They didn't trust him. They wanted to watch him. So they proposed to the Altrebbe that he should stay in Peterburg, in the capital, in the big city, which is essentially what Napoleon wanted, if you think about it spiritually speaking. And Altrebbe refused, until one of the government officials said he'll watch the Altrebbe and make sure he doesn't make any uprisings, on the condition that the Altrebbe would settle on part of the territory which was in his jurisdiction. And that's why the Altrebbe, by default, left Lozhne, where he had spent most of his life, and he moved to Liadi. Now, the Mittal Rebbe could have moved back to Liadi, although he didn't have any home. He had to rebuild it. But he made the decision to go back to his roots and to go back to the base where the Chassidim lived, where the Altarebbe's Nishomes, Altarebbe's people, Altarebbe's Bashad Yedidei Nefesh, those who loved him, lived. And he moved back to White Russia and he settled in Lubavitch, which is not far from Lozhne. And as it turned out, the land that he purchased to build his home was in the very, very same spot where that home had been, where the Altarebbe was raised as a child. So the Beis Medrash, the first shul, Altarebbe Mittler built a very, very large shul. And they used to call it the Hoidu Aleinu Shul, because it was extremely long. And you could walk from one end of the shul to the opposite end of the shul and finish the whole davening. Hoidu Aleinu Shul. I don't know how slow you had to daven or how fast you had to daven. It was called Hoidu Aleinu Shul. Maybe it was more proverbial than anything else. It was a very, very large shul on the very, very foundations, the very spot where Altarebbe spent his childhood learning in Lubavitch. But the Mittal Rebbe, of course, did not travel straight back to Lubavitch. He needed resources. Is a Gefahr near the Medina. He started to travel. His father passes away. I don't think he took his whole family with him, but he spent a number of months from Chavdal Tevis. Chavdal Tevis is winter, till Elul, the end of the year Mamish, traveling and raising money. And he raised around 35,000 rubles, which was a significant amount of money, especially then. You know, it was after a war. And this money, the Mittal Rebbe, believe it or not, he was Orthodox. He was religious. Which means, for those who don't understand, he practiced what he preached, or he preached what he practiced. And the halacha prohibits any one person to oversee a fund of tzedakah. So the Mittal Rebbe had a committee. And we know the names of the committee members who oversaw the collection of the funds and its distribution. The Mittal Rebbe didn't lie to people. The money is being raised to help the Altarebbe's children. Altarebbe's family was now destitute. They had nothing. And they were a very extended family, right? Altarebbe had six children, three sons and three daughters, many of whom were his dependents for various different reasons. And Altarebbe was gone, so they didn't have the idea that people were giving money to the Altarebbe, which Altarebbe then distributed. Their home, their estate was destroyed. They were penniless and homeless. So the Rebbe raised money, and then he distributed the money to the members of the family. And in the documents which have been discovered in Russia in the last 20 years, you found lists of precise amounts of how much he gave each family. I believe he gave the Tzemach Tzedek 1,000 rubles. Some he gave 500 rubles, some he gave 1,000 rubles, some he gave... The money, he didn't keep it for himself. He distributed it to all the members of his household, or the Altarebbe's household. Of course, he kept some of it for himself. And he didn't do it unilaterally, because it's not allowed. He did it with the help of a number of people who were his Hasidim, obviously. They were Altarebbe's Hasidim, his friends, who were the oversight committee, who saw to it that the money should go where it needs to go. Now, the famous letter, which would result in the Mittal Rebbe's arrest, had to do with a nuance in language. Mittal Rebbe was arrested, accused of being responsible with money. Because it says, I raised $35,000, 35,000 rubles, and I distributed a quarter. But when you read the Hebrew, it can be read in two ways. It can be read, I raised $35,000 and I gave out 25% of $35,000. Or I've given out 35,000 ruble, which is a quarter of what I raised, which would make the total 140,000 ruble, which was an impossible sum of money. Impossible. Unless he was an extortionist. And that was the libel, that was the accusation. That he's taking away people's poshet bread and butter. Money for mamish for survival. And it was not true, obviously. Any case, so the Mittler raised this money, had it distributed to the members of the Alter Rebbe's household, and then he himself moved back to Lubavitch. And he settled in Lubavitch. And for Hasidim, this was mamish redemption. It was Gan Eden. After all the tzaddis, there was a new start, a new Rebbe in their home territory. He moved back to the roots. This is where the Chassidim were. This is exactly what the doctor ordered. What the Chassidim needed was a Rebbe on location. So that year, Ayin Dalet, that would be 1813 to 1814, thousands of Chassidim flocked to Lubavitch. They couldn't afford it, but they were not going to miss the first opportunity to be with the Rebbe. They hadn't been with the Rebbe for several years. The Rebbe had been separated from his Hasidim for an extended period of time. The tzaddis and the obstruction of travel had made it impossible for Hasidim to journey. And this was a chance at a new start. As terrible as the lives were at the moment, the future was very promising. Certainly spiritually. Materially is a different story. And people flocked to the Rebbe, to the Mittler Rebbe in Lubavitch, to Tavkuf Ayin Dalet in droves. You all know the story with the Yosef Bala Gola, the Yosef the coachman. So the way that story ends is that for that Tishrei, the Yosef Bala Gola rented, he gave away to lease his horse and his wagon to another coachman, and he went on foot to Lubavitch, to the new Rebbe, for the first Tishrei of his Nesiyas. He had become a Rebbe 7 months before, but he spent most of that time traveling, and now he came to Lubavitch, in Elul. And thousands of Hasidim flocked to be with the Rebbe for that Tishrei, and of course the Mittler Rebbe told him, Yosef Bala Gola, you've done your job, for Kev Tefed, and become a mashpia. He told him the famous lashon. He says, "The tata yimach from agona balagola for the teva from a yochid, unich mach from a balagola a mashpia for the teva from a rabbi." My father made from a genius a coachman to save one Jew, and I am making from a coachman a mashpia for the benefit of many. He told him to go home and to become the mashpia in Beshinkovich. But in any case, the Mittler Rebbe came back to Lubavitch. On his return, one of the interesting little details was one of the people who was conspicuously absent was his son-in-law and successor, the Rebbe the Tzemach Tzedek. The Tzemach Tzedek took that 500 rubles and he invested it in a business as a silent partner, where his contribution would be money and advice, which is good enough. Money and advice was all you needed from the Tzemach Tzedek. You didn't need him to actually sell the Talesim. And I think he even was contemplating becoming a Rav for Panos. And the Mittler Rebbe wrote him a letter and says, please come live in Lubavitch. So the Tzemach Tzedek says, I don't want to live in Lubavitch, because if I live in Lubavitch, I won't have any rest. And I want to sit and learn, I want to sit and daven. The Tzemach Tzedek did not see the Mittler Rebbe as his Rebbe. Although he was Meiri V'chami, you know, Kvei Gdush was Meiri V'chami Admur, the Rebbe the Shver, but the Tzemach Tzedek was a Makabal Rishon. He received from Alter Rebbe directly. And as a result, he didn't see himself as a Makabal from the Tzemach Tzedek. He saw himself as another Makabal from the Alter Rebbe. And this was an issue that would pervade throughout the Nesiyas of the Mittler Rebbe, although the Tzemach Tzedek knew that the Rebbe, the Shver, was Rebbe, and he was not Rebbe, but in certain Inyonim, he wasn't Makabal. He disagreed with the Mittler Rebbe about his style of saying Chassidus, and so forth. So he stayed away. He didn't want to come. And the Mittler Rebbe Poshet begged him. He wanted him in Lubavitch. Even if he does nothing, he wanted his Tzemach Tzedek. It's a good piece of furniture to have around. And he promised the Tzemach Tzedek that he will give him no responsibilities. Come live in Lubavitch and I will never bother you. Except for one thing. Nigle. The Mittler Rebbe was determined to absolutely blow Chassidus open. Yeah, and his expression was, mein ganze koch is, a zwei Chassidim treffen sich, so man reden Yehudi Allah. He lived for Chassidus. Mamish. And not only for the avoid of Chassidus, but pusha for the scholar, for the understanding of Chassidus. He wanted his Chassidim to be so consumed by Chassidus that besides for Chassidus there was nothing. He didn't have time for Nigla, Mittler Rebbe. And he wanted that the inyanim of Nigla, all the Rabbeim, the Chabad Rabbeim, were asked Shalas and Halacha. Rabbonim, especially Chassidim, would correspond with Rabbeim and ask them to answer halachic questions. And the Mittal Rebbe was no exception. And the Mittal Rebbe wanted a Tzemach Tzedek to be responsible for that part of his role. Otherwise, he would leave him alone. And the Tzemach Tzedek acquiesced. And he came to Lubavitch. And the Mittal Rebbe kept his word, sort of. The Tzemach Tzedek had a chavrusa, the Chamid Debrav, they learned together. And they used to prepare the tshuvas. They prepared the responsa, the nigla. And the custom was that before they would send it off, they would show it to the Mittal Rebbe. Mittal Rebbe would read it and never make a comment, never say a word. And it became so patterned, so predictable, that they almost looked at the Mittal Rebbe's overseeing their work as a formality. You understand? Yeah, he wasn't really reading it, Mizokt. But he hayoim, it happened one time that there was a big shaila that was urgent. And the Rebbe, the Mittal Rebbe, was very busy. So the Tzemach Tzedek thinks to himself, the Shved has never made any comments on my tshuvas anyway. I'll send it and I'll show it to him tomorrow or the next day. And when he shows the Mittal Rebbe the tshuva, the Mittal Rebbe looks at it and says, you forgot a finish a teisvus. You forgot an explicit teisvus. And the Tzemach Tzedek was very hurt because it was the truth. So the Mittal Rebbe said to him, Zorg sich nicht, du bist noch nicht kein Rebbe. Don't feel bad, you're not yet a Rebbe. In other words, when you'll be a Rebbe, it's not Shaychas Ayin Funtos. Because you have the keich of the klal. The keich of a Rebbe is the keich of a chassidim. As weird as that sounds, but that's the mitzvah hadvarim. But you're not yet a Rebbe, you're still a private person. And the Tzemach Tzedek said in Lubavitch, at the end of the Mittal Rebbe's life, the Mittal Rebbe was very ill, extremely ill. And at that point, the Tzemach Tzedek became almost like an assistant Rebbe. Like Moshe Yodeh Metech Yodeh. They work together, the Tzemach Tzedek and the Mittal Rebbe, like the Rebbe and the Friedrich Rebbe. You know, the way you hear how the Rebbe Pashat held the Friedrich Rebbe up. The Friedrich Rebbe was so ill. And the Rebbe was a Rebbe. Because the Rebbe's Gesundheit made it possible for him to continue being a Rebbe. That's what was with Tzemach Tzedek and the Mittal Rebbe. For those 5 years or so, until the Histalkus. And then, of course, the Tzemach Tzedek was Mamalim became Chaisnei in Lubavitch. He became the successor of the Rebbe, the Mittal Rebbe. So Mittal comes back to Lubavitch, and he is re-establishing Chassidus, and he had new policies. He did a lot of things very differently than his father. The first thing that he did that was different from his father was how he dealt with the Masnagdim, which was very, very interesting. The Mittal Rebbe created the concept that we call today the Cold War. He wanted complete disengagement. Chassidim should not say good morning to Masnagdim. They should coexist. There should be zero interaction. The Mittal Rebbe felt that the only way to quiet the passions was not to feed them. There was a lot of anger, a lot of jealousy, a lot of animosity. And he felt that he was right, that if Masnagdim and Chassidim were ever going to get over it, there would have to be a period of cooling off. So he refused to allow his Chassidim to engage in debate, even in Kiruv. They didn't reach out to the Masnagdim to be Mekadim Chassidus. You have to really, really want on your own to join the ranks of Chassidim, because Chassidim isolated themselves to such a degree that in communities where there was not enough Chassidim to make their own shul, they were instructed to daven at home without a minyan. And by Kriyas HaTeilah, they should stand and listen through the window. Never walk into the shul. Don't greet them, have nothing to do with them. And it worked. It really worked. The Mittal Rebbe ended the fight between Chassidim and Masnagdim through disengagement, Pashut. The Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, the next generation, reached out to the Masnagdim, and he had help from the Reform. You know who made peace Chassidim and Masnagdim? The Haskalah. That's who made peace Chassidim and Masnagdim. The Reform. All of a sudden, we discovered we couldn't afford to have our stupid, meaningless, petty, egocentric fights because we had a real enemy. That's how Chassidim and Masnagdim came together. The Mittal Rebbe and the Tzemach Tzedek were brothers. We're best friends. The Rebbe Marash and the Rebbe Chanan of Kovna worked together. The Rebbe Rashav and Rebbe Chaim Brisker. The Friedrich Rebbe and Rebbe Chaim Eiser. They worked hand in hand on all projects of Askanas Tziburis. At least many projects of Askanas Tziburis. It was a tremendous, tremendous Kirov HaLavoves. They didn't agree about everything. How could you expect people to agree? They're Jews. Even human beings don't agree. Jews, the Kol Shem Kavachem. But hatred, sinner, a libel of them not being Jewish, it was out of the question. But the Mittal Rebbe made that possible through his tactic of disassociation, complete disassociation. And there were other things the Mittal Rebbe did. And one of them was that the Mittal Rebbe started teaching Chassidus to what was called in those days, Avreichim, younger light, younger people. But Avreichim meant people 18, 19, 20. 18 years old was married with children. But the Alter Rebbe, there was no such thing. Before a person learned Chassidus, they had to be proficient, they had to be a master of Nigla de Teira. And the people who were learning Chassidus Malkan Rebbe were in their 30s and 40s, Goinim. Maybe they learned Tanya a little bit, maybe they went to Fabrengen Yitzchak Kislev. But a young person, even a young adult, even a person who was married and sitting and learning Al Shulchan Chaisnei on his father-in-law's table, was not permitted to learn Chassidus till he had achieved a very significant proficiency in Nigla de Teira. This was the policy. The Mittler Rebbe changed that. And he made Chassidus available to much younger people. And he introduced a concept called Yoshvim. I reckon by the Alter Rebbe, it also existed, but by the Mittler Rebbe, it became a form. Yoshvim means these young married men, who were big Talmid Chachamim, by the standards of the generation of the Mittler Rebbe, there was a very big drop-off, by the way. Between the Alter Rebbe's generation and the Mittler Rebbe's generation, there was an enormous Yidid Sadeidus because of the war. Because of the war, it changed. Compared to today, they were who knows what, but compared to the Alter Rebbe's Chassidim, it was an under erech. Mittler Rebbe once said about him, Hillel Paracher, he's different than the others. Hillel Paracher could have been from Alter Rebbe. But there was a very big change because the world changed. It was an interruption. But there were still big lamdim, and they were being provided for. They had no rechaim al tzavarim, they had no panasa worries because they were being provided for. So they would come to Lubavitch. And they had permission to sit in Lubavitch for 6 months or a year. And during this period, they would be saturated with the haskalah of Chassidus and the avoid of Chassidus. And the Mittler Rebbe was a mayan amezgaber. He couldn't give enough. It was spilling out of him, Chassidus. And he was machanech, a whole new generation, to a whole new tziur of Chassidus Chabad, a very, very significantly new vision, model, hitztairut, appearance of Chassidus, where his people, even very young people, were just completely swimming in an ocean of Chassidus. Both on a level of Haskalah, on a philosophical level, and on a level of Avoida. And the Mittler Rebbe was the master of Avoida. The Mittler Rebbe taught. The Mittler Rebbe was the Mashpia. If the Alter Rebbe was the Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe was the Mashpia. The Mittler Rebbe wrote the Kuntres Ha'ispailus. And the Mittler Rebbe wrote the Kuntres Shara Yichud. And the purpose of these Svarim was simply to teach Chassidei Chabad how to do his bondanus. To think, which was the whole point of Chassidus Chabad, was to think about the greatness of the Eibishter within the framework of Teiras Chassidus Chabad. And the Mittler Rebbe wrote the book. He was the master. He taught Chassidim how to translate the lomdus, the scholarship, the neshama of Chassidus into practical Avedas Hashem. This is what he undertook, and he did it to an unbelievable measure of success. The Mittler Rebbe had hundreds of Chassidim who to sit and think for 3 or 4 hours in a row without the mind wandering for a moment was a normal thing. A dry fear shodik is bondanus was katness. They could sit, the concentration that they developed was unbelievable. He raised them up. They were intelligent people to start with. But the Mittler Rebbe invested of himself so heavily in them that he raised them to extraordinary levels of concentration and connection, intellectual connectedness. They were gvaldik abale madrege, very, very elevated. There's two expressions from the Friedrich Rebbe. The Friedrich Rebbe quotes Chassidim, but the Friedrich Rebbe is the one doing the quoting, which means Savart for Rebbe, about the Mittler Rebbe's period. The first is that the Mittler Rebbe's Chassidim did not lack Mashiach, because they had Mashiach in Chassidus. And they had no money for bread. They were so poor that when the Mittler Rebbe used to print Svarim, he didn't bind them, because nobody could afford to buy a whole sefer. They used to buy pieces, yiddias, folders of papers, together in a whole town. They had 10 chassidim. Each one bought a different section of the sefer, and they would share it. They couldn't afford a sefer. That's how poor they were. But in terms of chassidus, they were so rich, they were mamish not in golas. I always ask myself, what about their wives and children? It's a shvera kasha. But they were gishtanin and mamish in the hechste madreges. And the second expression is, this is even a deeper expression than the first, was the Mittler Rebbe gegeben seine Chassidim, hat kein Rebbe nicht gegeben. What the Mittler Rebbe gave Chassidim, no Rebbe gave. And the Havonish Abedover, the Pnimius of it is, and again, I don't know if this is true, but this is what I think it means, a Rebbe cannot give what you cannot receive. It stands to reason. The Rebbeim want to give, and the Rebbeim are extraordinarily generous. But they're not going to... pour into a cup with a hole. The Rebbe had sich hereingelegt, the Mittel Rebbe invested himself in his Chassidim, in the Hadracha, in the guidance that he gave them, both in the learning and understanding of Chassidus, and in the Avodah, into translate the Chassidus into practical Avodas Hashem, that they were molded into Kelim, into suited vessels, suited recipients of Chassidus in such a way that the Rebbe could give more. No Rebbe was able to give, because no Rebbe had that kind of Hiskashdus, like the Mittel Rebbe had with Chassidim. And the key word is the word Takei Hiskashdus. That bond, that glue that existed between Chassidim and the Rebbe, the Rebbe and Chassidim and Mittel and Rebbe, was unbelievably deep. It was very, very, very strong. There was a goy whose name was Professor Habenthal. Habenthal, I don't know how you say it in Russian. It's written in Yiddish. He testified on the Mittel Rebbe's behalf when the Mittel Rebbe was arrested. And what he said was that he had heard, he was a big philosopher, he was a big thinker, and he knew Yiddish. He had heard about how the Mittel Rebbe says Chassidus, and he couldn't imagine. Someone described to him, as a goy, that the Rebbe stands for hours and hours and hours and talks to hundreds of men, and nobody moves. And their concentration and their connectedness is so unbelievable that the Rebbe could talk for 5 or 6 hours and no one loses it. They're with him. So Habenthal said, I couldn't imagine this is humanly possible. You know, you have one student, two, hundreds of students on this level. And the Rebbe would go on and on for hours and hours and he would never stop. So he traveled to Lubavitch by wagon, by coach. And it was a summer day. So the Hasidim were in Offenhof. It was very quiet. In a shtetl, it was almost as quiet outside as it was inside. It wasn't a city. We had to have insulation. There was no people, no noise. When the Rebbe was standing off in Haifa of Abima, the Rebbe was standing on a platform and talking, and he stopped his wagon and he watches, and he understood Yiddish. So of course there's a lot of Hebrew, but there was enough Yiddish that he gained a sense of the communication. The Mittel Rebbe was not telling stories. It was tiefes haskalah, deep, deep philosophy. And he looks at this group of people, and every one of them is enchanted. They're in a trance. Hundreds of people, they're listening so completely. Now one of them loses track of where he is, and they're with him in his intellectual world for hours and hours, 5, 6, 7 hours at a time. He said to the government, he says, no way a man of such intellect who can have such a profound impact on so many other people could be a crook. Kenish Zayin. You're smart people, but to be such a brilliant intellectual and to have raised so many people to such a madriga, it's impossible that he should be a petty criminal. It can't be. This is what he said. And this testimony was very helpful to the Rebbe when he was tried in Peterburg. I'm sorry, in Vitebsk, at the end of his life. So it was an unbelievable nesius. Unbelievable nesius. Of course, the story is that when he first became a Rebbe, things were relatively speaking normal. There was a schedule. He said, Chassidus, Chveisfos, Shabbos and Monday and Thursday, I don't know, whatever the schedule was. And we've recently published, they printed now a few years ago, a Sefer of Tavkofai and Zion, a Sefer of Chassidus of the 5th year of the Rebbe's Nesius. And the Maimonim were actually pretty short. The Maimonim were pretty short, half an hour, 40 minutes. Because in the very beginning of the Nesius, the Maimonim had some kind of normalcy in terms of time. Yeah, you could be a Chassid and have a life, you know. Eventually, however, the Chassidus just blew up. It just became bleakful. In other words, if there had been some kind of a semblance of a schedule of a day and a night and a Shabbos and a weekday, that eventually changed. It's hard to know exactly after how many years, but at a certain point, the Chassidus just absolutely radiated, and the Rebbe started to reveal Chassidus on Asher and on Abreg, and it became impossible to keep up with him. Impossible. The Tzemach Tzedek stopped coming to the Maimonim. Whenever the Rebbe said Chassidus, he was his son-in-law and successor, so they would call him. He would come and sit. As soon as the Maimon was over, he'd leave and go back to his work. He didn't stay for Chazara, he didn't hang around, he had his own life, but he came to Chassidus. But when the Rebbe started saying Chassidus in the middle of the night, in the middle of the day, and for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, the Tzemach Tzedek stopped coming. And he was asked, how are you talking? He said, I need a schedule, there's no schedule, no day, no night. The irony was that Tzemach Tzedek's children were the Mittel Rebbe's Chassidim, and their father had a problem with the Mittel Rebbe. It was a very interesting situation. The Tzemach Tzedek's second son was called the Maril, Ruda Leib. He was Mekushe to his Zaydi. He was so attached to his grandfather that when his father became a rabbi, he refused to become his father's own chassid. And it took his father 15 years to make his own son his chassid. And it was only because of his Mesiras Nefesh in Peterburg, when he went for matters of chinuch and it was Mesiras Nefesh, he took along the Maril, his son. And when he came back, he came into the house and he said to his Rebbetzin, Medav shtel na spetzeren warmes. Ich komme von Peterburg und ich habe gebracht mit sich an neuem chassid. So we have to make a special dinner, he said to his wife, a special supper, because I'm coming from Petersburg and I'm bringing from there a new chassid. He meant his own son. Because this was the kind of connection there was between the Mittel Rebbe and his chassidim. The Tzemach Tzedek's son, who was old enough to have known the Mittel Rebbe, when the Mittel Rebbe became a Rebbe, he wasn't even by mitzvah. Mittel Rebbe was Rebbe only for 15 years. So, the Mittel Rebbe passed away, how old was Ma'aril? How old was he? He was in his early 20s. And the Ishkashras, the bond that was formed, was so deep, he never severed it. He couldn't transfer to his own father for a decade and a half. Till he was mokebel. There's a lot of, please come sit over here. There's Ladik. Please come sit here. There's plenty of seats. Kum talan ahead. So please come and sit here. There's so much room. It's empty. Any case, so the Mittel Rebbe introduced a dimension of Hasidus which is mamish unbelievable. And he raised up Hasidim to a fantastic level. And like I said to you before, there's different expressions. One of the expressions is, mein ganze Wunsch, as es zwei Hasidim treffen sich, soll man reden Yehudi Allah. Or the save of Mal, there's different expressions. He lived for Chassidus Mamish. Besides for Chassidus, remember, I'm Cain Levin. It's all he lived for. And this is what he inspired, and he gave his Chassidim in an unbelievable measure, to a fantastic degree of success. And there's some interesting stories about the Mittel Rebbe's Chassidim, and their ascent, their having risen up through the efforts and inspiration of the Rebbe. For example, the Mittel Rebbe had a chassid who broke his leg in the middle of a maimer, was pushing. And his leg snapped, pushed. And as long as the Rebbe talked, he didn't feel pain. Now he's standing on a broken leg, you understand, that's a bad idea. When the maimer finished, he starts to scream hysterically. In other words, the maimer pushed, it neutralized his nervous system. He was so, his brain so much took over his body, he didn't feel pain. I heard from my mashpia a story which is really incredible. A chassid was standing with his back against the wall, meditating for hours. But the wall he was standing against was a stone wall, which was the back wall of an oven. And as he was standing there, they heated up the oven and his hands baked to the wall. He didn't feel it. And when he came out of his distractions, he couldn't get his hands off. He was screaming in pain. His hands were stuck. That's called hamaka, concentration. I'm not talking about it, Evan. I'm talking about chassidim. Chassidim. It was an incredible madrega of ascent. He lifted them unbelievably. And Chassidus was rocking, was on fire in the school of the Mittel Rebbe. And one of the key contributors to this whole thing was the flow of people, young people. Young, I don't mean 16. Young, I mean 20, 25. There was always a lot of people in Lubavitch who were coming and going. And they brought Lubavitch with them to Kehillas of Anash all over White Russia. Because the Mittel Rebbe had a policy that mandated that any chassid who traveled to Lubavitch was free to stay. The condition was that if you went home, you had to stop in every city and say chassidus. So he saturated the community with chassidus. So in other words, a week wouldn't pass, or 2 weeks wouldn't pass, before in every Lubavitch Kehillah, they would call everybody together, and they would say, the Rebbe Shliach is coming. He'll be here on this day, and he's leaving on this day. We have to make a big Fabrengen. And of course, the center of the Fabrengen wasn't the Mashke and the Lechayim, it was the Maimer. And the Maimer would go on and on and on and on. And the first time you heard it, it blew your mind. The second time it heard you, it depressed you. And eventually, you started paying attention. And the Alter Rebbe's Hasidim themselves started to travel to Lubavitch and to take in this overflow, this dimension of Hasidus Chabad, which it made the Maamar of the Alter Rebbe look like short speeches, drashalach. The famous story with Kusha Lepla, I don't want to tell you that, Ichsa Sipir. Kusha Lepla said, I've been traveling to the Alter Rebbe for 25 years. I always understood what he's saying. And now this kid who's young enough to be my son or my grandson, Chazaz Amaymer, you could see from the way he says it that he's enjoying every minute of it. and I am totally lost. I'm blown away. It's a whole long story how he came to the Middle Rebbe, and the Middle Rebbe had to teach him to develop himself, and he became Mamash Anu Muhus, Kidu Asiba. But the Hasidim were coming and going. Wherever they went, they brought Hasidus with them. And Hasidus, pushed the Limud, Haskolas, Hasidus, saturated the Kehila of Anash. It became a tuf of unbelievable upliftedness in terms of Limud Hasidus. Bagashmis was Tzadus Tzurus. Very difficult times. But spiritually, it was a very, very elevated time. In addition, the Mittel Rebbe did something which was before never done before. He wrote his own Maimonim. He wrote them himself. And before the ink was dry, he gave it away. His desperation for the dissemination of Hasidus. He didn't have any sense of restraint. He just gave and gave and gave. The Maimon was not even finished. He would give away the Ksav. It should be copied. And you should know, he sent his sister, I don't know if he sent, Menucha Rochel, his daughter went by the Tzemach Tzedek sons. There was Yidden who went to Yisrael during the Nesiyas of the Middle Rebbe. Not Rabbi Yankov Kuli, but others in Hebron. And when he sent them, I think the Yaffa, the Mordechai Yaffa, the printer from Koppos, went through the time of the Middle Rebbe, but I could be wrong. The Middle Rebbe sent him to live in Israel. And they complained that we're going to be so far away from the Rebbe, we're not going to have the Maimonim. So he says, I promise you I'll send you the Maimonim. And he used to send them the originals. He used to send them the Kisveyat Kedesh, his manuscripts. And some of the manuscripts that have survived, all the hardships, survived because they were not in Europe, they were in Israel. The Middle Rebbe of Shikin, Zayin Ksav. And it was so generous, he just gave it away. And people copied it, and they had it. We have a fraction. I would say a lot less than half of the Middle Rebbe of Maimonim. Even though if you have the whole shelf, it's a lot of space on the bookshelf. You know, a lot of dust will be collected there that you won't have to breathe. As those books sit planted firmly in place, might as well bolt them shut. That's how often you open these for them, unfortunately. But we don't have all of Middle Rebbe. Because his Hasidus was so voluminous. It was so prolific. It's mamish superhuman. But the other thing that he did was he published his own Maimonim. Printing Maimonim was not common. The Alter Rebbe wrote the Tanya and spent 20 years printing that little book. But that was it. The Alter Rebbe's Hasidus was not published. The first Hasidus he published, the Alter Rebbe, was published in the 1930s and 1920s in Israel. And then it was on little pamphlets. And it was unofficial. It was printed by a Yid whose name is Reb Chaim Eliezer Berkhovsky. He was a Liadir Chosid who was Mason Nefesh for the printing of Hasidus. Of course, the Tzemach Tzedek printed Teda Eden Lekut Teda. But Bechlal Hasidus was not printed. Tzemach Tzedek did not print his own Hasidus. The Rebbe Marash did not print his own Hasidus. The Rebbe Rashab did not print his own Hasidus. It was all manuscript. The Friedrich Rebbe did not print his own Hasidus until he left Russia. The Mittel Rebbe printed 10 books of Hasidus during his lifetime. And they weren't just 10 volumes. As the Friedrich Rebbe said, there were 10 categories of Hasidus written for different groups of Hasidus, different classes of Hasidim. Simpler in Yonim was for lower Hasidim. Deeper, more involved in Yonim was for higher Hasidim. The deepest Hasidus to this day is called Imre Bino. It's a Hasidus in the Middle Rebbe, which was published by him and written for the great Chassid, the famous Chassid, Rabbi Kushiel Lepler, who had initially started out not understanding anything, and he ended up becoming the biggest expert of all of the Middle Rebbe's Teda, of the Middle Rebbe's Hasidus, Kushiel Lepler. So the Rebbe by Fabrengen used to tell this, I mentioned this to you earlier, that the Middle Rebbe published his Hasidus, but he did not bind it. You see, in the olden days, it was two different businesses. One was printing and the other was binding. Because you printed a Sefer, you paid the equivalent, let's say, of today's standards, of $250 for a book. Binding was a whole other business. Many people had Sfarim that were just in a rubber band or wrapped in paper. They couldn't afford to bind it because binding was another $50. But when they bound the Sefer in those days, it would survive an atomic attack. It was bound. You know, these binders knew what they were doing. They did it. It was an art. It wasn't just a living. If you ever find old book binders, there's a pride. It's a craft. It's not just business. Today, the books are bound with strings. And before it comes to your house, the strings are already loose. The glue is coming apart. In those days, binding a book, so people used to sell Sfarim unbound. And if you could afford it, you bound it. If you didn't afford it, you put a rubber band around it. That's how people lived. The Middle Rebbe didn't bind his Sfarim that he published because Chassidim couldn't afford to buy a whole book. You know how books go. They go in little pamphlets, machberesen. You have 10 sheets together folded. Take any sefer. You look at the back. You see it's a bunch of little folders of svarim, glued together, strung together, and then cut at the tip to make it straight. But it's individual machberes, heften, pamphlets. So the Rebbe did not bind his svarim. So Chassidim could buy shtikalach, pieces of Zefid. One chassid had this piece, another chassid had this piece, and they would share it, they would exchange it, so they were able to learn the chassidus. But nobody had the whole Zefid, they couldn't afford it. And of course, you know the standard lashon, everybody knows it's bavus, that the two svarim that the Middle Rebbe printed, which were not published for individual chassidim, were the aleph beis of chassidus. The two svarim were the Shari Eira, which is the Chanukah and Purim, and the Shaar HaYichud. The Shaar HaYichud is called the Aleph Beis of Chassidus, and the Shaar HaYichud is called the Mafteach, the key to Teilas HaChassidus, because the Shaar HaYichud is a very interesting Sefer. It's Poshet, it's Seder Eshtalshlus. He starts from the top and he works his way down, he goes with all Seder Eshtalshlus from the beginning to the end. It's a very interesting Sefer, but it's not something that you can read unless you have some background, with all due respect. Maybe a little more than some. But this is the Middle Rebbe, and there was a radiation of Chassidus that's mamish indescribable, incredible. Uktuv gave Zayin Chassidim to a phenomenal madrega, And there was more to it. Besides for the depth and the generosity of Chassidus, there was also beauty to Chassidus. And this is something that not a lot of people know, and it's really worth knowing. The Mittler Rebbe created what you and I would call a three-dimensional Chassidus. It wasn't just Maimonim. There was music. The Mittler Rebbe had paid a choir and an orchestra. At a time that people were struggling to make a living, the Mittler Rebbe created a Chassidus with an aesthetic beauty. Tashenkeit poshet, a yoifi chitzoini. When you came to the Mittler Rebbe to a Fabreng or to a Chassidus, there was a group of people who would compose Chabad Negunim, deep meditative, pensive Negunim, and then they would perform them, and if it wasn't Shabbos and Yom, they'd perform them with an orchestra, and it created such a mood. And when the Rebbe wanted to raise himself to have Ruach HaKedesh, he would call this orchestra, and they would sing and play, and the Rebbe fakts chufeim, you know, you have in Tanakh, when the Nevi'im wanted to experience Negin, Ruach HaKedesh, Nevuah, they would call. Yes, so the Rebbe, the Middle Rebbe developed. So it wasn't like, you know, the Alter Rebbe's Nigin is like Ufaratsta, you know, and the Middle Rebbe's Kapelia is like Dayenu, you know. They sang. And it enhanced the Chassidus. It enhanced not just how it looked, but how you felt it. You lived it in all dimensions. It consumed you. Chassidus enveloped you. And one of the more interesting things, this is quite interesting, is the Middle Rebbe had a stable of horses. Cavalry, horses. And he had Chassidim who were trained as riders, who would do maneuvers. When the Rebbe was in a certain moment of the Matzev, I don't know how often this happened, but they were on the ready, they would get on their horses and perform. And this also was part of Chassidus. Now, how does riding a horse well help you learn and daven? I don't know, but no one's asking me. The Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe, the Satamuf Gehaben, the Rebbe wanted, this was a part of the model of Chassidus, and the participants in these things were themselves Chassidim. In other words, these were deep people who had to have some kind of kavonis, they had to have a certain focus when they were engaged in these exercises, because it was an entertainment. It was Chassidus. And this is one of the things which is so unusual about Chassidus Chabad. And it really, really corners Chassidus Chabad. It puts it in a very difficult place. How could something be so beautiful and be so real? There's a constant that says that the more form there is, the less substance there'll be. And it makes sense. If you want something to be pretty, you can't expect it to be genuine. You've listened to a Chazan sing, Chazanim can cry at the drop of a hat, if you so desire. But it's nothing. It's air. It has no substance. Chassidus is avoidas Hashem. It's not entertainment. It's not beauty. It's not look how sweet and don't you want to belong to this wonderful culture? It was no culture. It was religion. In the most traditional dogmatic sense of the word. Ultra, ultra, ultra. How many ultras? Yes? And at the same time, the Alter Rebbe, Angefert Bachsidin and Nagina, the Alter Rebbe, his model, his idealized model of Chassidus is that it's supposed to be grand. and beautiful and real. This combination, the word that should be employed is reich, rich. The problem is it only lasted that generation. The Tzemach Tzedek canceled all of these things. And the direct reason for this was the Rebbe's arrest. Because the government, you know, it says in Chumash Lama Tisro, Vos Weister Zach. The government saw the Fanem, Mamish royalty. And it had such beauty, and it had such a powerful impact on so many people, they started to breathe under Rabbeim's necks, and to start examining their books and looking over their accounting. And the Tzemach Tzedek decided it wasn't worth it. He wanted the government out of his hair. The Mittler Rebbe, as I told you in the last hour, Poshet passed away. He passed away before his case was finished. He was officially let go, but he was not a free man. They were breathing on his neck. Tzemach Tzedek canceled this and many other things. And Hasidus had to become impoverished. Davening and learning, and that's it. Anything showy, anything that beautified Hasidus and made it whole, made it robust, made it complete, was eliminated. But I don't think it's supposed to be that way. It was a necessity. In other words, you want them, and the Rebbe didn't have time for anything. The Rebbe was saving the world. But Chabad Hasidus is meant to be whole. An experience that brings out of you your emes, and at the same time has a yoifi chitzeni, an external beauty. This was the Mittler Rebbe really achieved in a way. I mean, what do we know about the Rabbeim and about their accomplishments? A certain wholeness in the model of Hasidus. Now, I'm going to interrupt for a minute, and let you breathe and sign your names down again, and I'm going to continue this instead of the Ein Yankiv. But I just want to say one more thing before I stop. And that is, there was one more very significant characteristic to the new model of Hasidus that was unique to the Mittler Rebbe. And that was the elimination of his spilos. The elimination of emotion, of passion, of demonstrative expressions of emotion. The Mittler Rebbe did not suffer people getting too emotional. Not that they shouldn't feel emotions, but they shouldn't show them off. And this was in stark contrast to his own father, the Alter Rebbe, who, as we know, Kaiklin, Alter Rebbe used to roll Kipshute, in the middle of davening, saying Chassidus. Now the Rebbe, the Mittler Rebbe came of him, and the Mittler Rebbe was a marble statue, didn't budge. His body would drip perspiration. He would sweat profusely and didn't even shake. Stood like a statue. And he expected this of Chassidim. All the emotion on the inside, nothing on the outside. And if a Chassid would show demonstration of emotion, the Rebbe merachak zayin. The Rebbe had no suffering, no tolerance for it. He wanted it to be emes. You know, the kuntres ha'espailos talks about not having espailos. That's the thing that people don't realize. Espailos means emotional response, reaction. And the Rebbe says the more external your emotions are, the more superficial they are. You understand? Kuntres ha'espailos is about how not to have espailos. Because it has to be bepnimius. And this was a part of the model. Chabad, moichin, kop. And how it's all experienced in the heart, but out in a veinik, all on the inside, and on the outside you saw nothing. And again, understand that the key was not the Rebbe himself. The Rebbe the Chanan de Metzias and Gans. The key was the Maimer de Matav of Chassidim. He raised up his Chassidim to be able to be in such a condition of Vekas and his Kashis and Delakus, that they could stand for hours and hours and concentrate and be in a different place and experience all kinds of energies, Ruchnis de Goyres, and Bechitonius, and were doing nothing. The Mittler Rebbe had, I'm sorry? Who? You're right. And that not everybody was meant for Chassidus Chabad. Lubavitcher, Chabad's another story. It's a Matthias. Von Alosh Neteh Shom, der Schuster. Der Schuster darf taken ish versteht. The Rebbe Rashab said that. And by the Mittler Rebbe, it was for sure that way. Just in conclusion, the Mittler Rebbe's Shamashim were very big fools. The people, the servants in the house, were idiots. By choice. Because they knew, they understood so little that they could not, they had no way of, you asked them, what's going on in the house? Our Lord, the Rebbe just ate breakfast, took a nap. They had no concept. And it was a way of keeping secrecy. So one of the Shamashim of the Rebbe developed a whole business. he would say, "Du willst denn dem Rebbe davnen? You want to see the Rebbe davnen for a ruble, which was a handsome sum of money. I'll show you the Rebbe davening." So which chassid didn't want to see the Rebbe davening? The Rebbe davened b'yichidus privately. So he'd walk into the Rebbe's room, middle Rebbe's room. The middle Rebbe steht in mitten cheder. He's standing in the middle of the room, facing away from the door, in talis tefillin, mu'utar mu'utif, and not budging, not moving a limb. They would walk in, and this Mesharis would walk over to the Rebbe, pick him up by the elbows or under the arms, and just turn him around so that they could see him. And the Chassidim would be aghast. Ah, chutzpah, how do you touch the Rebbe? He says, don't worry, he has no idea what I'm doing. It's not going to bother him. He's never going to know we were here. And then you saw him, you picked him up, turned him back, put him back in the same position, and you left the room, and that was it. And the Rebbe, when he davened, was not here, bichlal. And bichitainius was nothing. The dveikus, the whole idea of chassidus at the middle of Rebbe, refined the chassidus of the Alter Rebbe, was this connection, this dveikus. His counterpart, the Baran Strashela, I talked about this recently, was also the Alter Rebbe's Talmud, and a godlash Rebbe Gdelim, who became his own Rebbe, he had a tremendous amount of emotional demonstration. But the middle Rebbe felt that this is the next generation. Okay, we'll take a break. Mamash will speak a minute.